Thank you to Melissa, who became our new patron this week. If you want to get your name mentioned at the top of the show, become a patron like Melissa. Join today at patreon.com/majorspoilers, where you not only get access to bonus content available nowhere else, you also get to keep this machine running for your own amusement and entertainment. Find out more. Sign up today. Just a couple of bucks a month. Patreon.com/majorspoilers. Thank you, Melissa. And thank you, dear listeners.
The Major Spoilers podcast covers news, reviews, and of course, spoilers, and goes into details about the topics discussed. So if you haven't read, listened, or watched the items we talk about, you might want to come back later.
I'm Matthew.
I'm Rodrigo.
And I'm Steven, and you're listening to the Major Spoilers podcast, the podcast for pop culture and comic fans.
In this issue, who is the master planner? What is the secret of Rain? Why is Cowboy Bebop canceled? Where is the crew of Serenity? And what about Naomi? These questions and many more whooshing past your head as a CG animated onomatopoeia with a soundtrack by Yes Answered and or Not by the Major Spoilers crew as mountains come out of the sky and stand there. Why? Because the Major Spoilers podcast is on the air.
Welcome to issue 956 of the Major Spoilers podcast. Thank you so much for downloading and joining us.
That's my area code.
Is downloading and joining us? Thank you for checking us out this week. We're so happy to be here for once in 2 years. I'm so excited for this. In 2 years, we have been trying to align our trade paperback discussions with the movies that are coming out. And finally, this week, there's a Spider-Man No Way Home movie coming out, and we've got a Spider-Man story to talk about where we not only get to see Ned Leeds show up in this, but we also get to see, Spider-Man villain who everyone thought was dead coming back. Maybe just like the movies. Who knows? Because we don't spoil things about movies. We leave that to the Variety trade rag to do that. So there you go. There you go, everybody. Oh, hey,
Steven doesn't hold a grudge.
Now, so here's the thing. Let me just say this. I have said this many, many, many times before. Spoilers do not bother me in the least. In fact, I would argue that spoilers enhance my enjoyment of the movies. Back in 1980, my friend Tim went and saw Empire Strikes Back before I had a chance to see Empire Strikes Back. And I remember him telling me again and again and again all the big highlights of the movie, like 2 weeks before I could go and see the movie with my dad. That did not lessen my enjoyment of Empire Strikes Back one iota, even though I knew everything that was coming. That being said, I expect, and I'm not saying that the Variety or the Hollywood Reporter, both of which are owned by the same parent company, by the way, everyone, just keep that in mind. They're both owned by the same parent company. I would expect them in their reviews to be a little bit more cerebral and evenly balanced in their
coy
review. Maybe I don't even know if they need to be coy. I think that they don't need to give major plot points. I think they should be talking about the acting and the direction and what is the meaning of this in light of all the other MCU films and what's going on at Disney Plus and how many more films can Sony really pull out of their hat and still share it with the MCU. Those are kinds of things that I expect to see in a review of a film that just had its debut last night in Hollywood red carpet. No one else has seen it. Instead, that dang review spoiled the entire plot. All the surprise appearances that the studio has been hiding from us in the review. And I was just reading that going, well, I kind of knew this stuff was coming, but come on, Variety, come on. So that's just my take on it. I was just a little surprised that Variety, who you would think would not be going that deep into spoiler territory, went that deep into the spoiler territory. So that's where my snark comes from. Anyway, here's some other news. Rodrigo?
In other news, after one season, Netflix has canceled the live-action adaptation of Cowboy Bebop. The series featured John Cho as Spike Spiegel, Mustafa Shakir as Jet Black, and Daniela Pineda as Faye Valentine. Netflix did not cite reasons for the cancellation, but initial reaction to the series was tepid from audiences, with Rotten Tomatoes reporting a 54% rating from fans and a 46% rating from critics.
Did either of you guys get through the series?
Not all the way through.
Okay.
I didn't even start it.
Rodrigo, did you not get all the way through because you're not interested or because you got busy?
Busy is actually probably more of it. But as we say in the pre-show, I found the time to watch Arcane, right? So
yeah,
I watched one episode of it and I thought it was good. You know, I liked it. And then I turned around and started watching the original Cowboy Bebop. And then I was like, I've already seen this. And I just kind of hopped to something else, I guess.
Yeah. And I can understand. That's that kind of tepid response. If you like the first episode, imagine that, 10 more times or whatever, however many episodes that this was, 9 more times. And I thought it was a very fine television series.
Yeah.
There is a post-credit, not quite a post-credit sequence that finally shows where Ed shows up in the piece, kind of hinting at a second season. But the way that the first season ended really felt like, oh, they're not coming back. This was a done in one season and they're just erasing all the other stuff from existence, which I was fine because this is a different retelling. But I guess, again, I'll go off on, if people want a shot for shot remake of an anime, why? Why?
Well,
just enjoy the anime. Netflix has also the original anime for you to watch.
Well, so you say, like, why would people want a shot for shot remake? And it's like, well, because Netflix drew the circle and lit the candles and summoned the ghost of Cowboy Bebop, right? It's like, when you tell people this is Cowboy Bebop, they're going to come in with expectations. And Cowboy
Unless
Bebop...
Unless they haven't.
I'm sorry, what?
Unless they don't, right? I mean, if you looked at Netflix... all of their marketing is pushing to people who are not Cowboy Bebop fans.
Yeah, but do you think that the Cowboy Bebop fans aren't going to find it? Like,
oh,
that,
no.
Like,
no.
That vocal group of people that have bashed this this show are largely people that have watched Cowboy Bebop and that enjoyed the Cowboy Bebop anime. It's like, if Netflix had done an original show and was like, we are going to do this show and we are inspired by shows like Cowboy Bebop and, I don't know, Space Dandy and Full Metal Alchemist, whatever, right? If they're like, this is very anime inspired and we're going to do this, it might have gotten a much better response than if they were just trying to do a different live action Cowboy Bebop, right? You and I, we can be like, okay, well, we've seen, like, the three of us have seen so many reboots and remakes and adaptations that we probably always go in with as clear a hard drive as possible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're like, okay, well, you know, this could be, like, for all we know, they're going to be like, this is actually a sequel to the original Cowboy Bebop, and it wouldn't actually, like, phase us too much.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, we've seen all kinds of stuff like that, but most people aren't us. Most people are like, oh, I see I think that's this Cowboy Bebop. I like Cowboy Bebop. And then they watch it and it's, you know, it's not as dynamic because the other one's a cartoon and it's not as succinct because it's a different show that's trying to accomplish something else. And people are disappointed because whatever it is that they carried in with them is not there. But that's not necessarily the fault of the people that are carrying stuff with them. That's the fault of Netflix for saying, hey, come watch this. Whatever you have, it'll be there. And it's not.
Yeah. I was on the morning stream this week talking with Scott and Brian, and they asked about, you know, does this kind of stuff disappoint you? And it's like, I have learned over the last 10, 15 years to go into anything with the lowest to zero expectations on this. And yes, I can be excited about it. All the trailers that they were running for the Cowboy Bebop thing looked really good. But I went in with zero expectations so that bar is set so low that if it falls below that, if it doesn't make it over the bar, it must be really, really bad. But sure, if it even just clears the bar by a little bit, it can't be that bad. So that's kind of, I mean, I also spent a whole year and a half just watching nothing but movies with a Rotten Tomato rating of less than 20. So that also probably plays a little bit into it. So
see, I do that without intending to. So.
Yeah, I know. We know all about that. Anyway,
shut up.
Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips are bringing fans a new reckless graphic novel in April, according to Image Comics. This time around, the noir series set in the Southland turns the spotlight on Ethan's reckless sidekick, Anna. Here's how Image Comics describes the series. In The Ghost in You, it's the winter of 1989, and Ethan is out of town, so this time, Anna has to tackle the job on her own. When a movie scream queen asks her to prove the mansion she's renovated isn't haunted, Anna will stumble into decades-long mystery of one of Hollywood's most infamous murder houses, a place with many dark secrets, some of which might just kill her. Reckless, the Ghost in You arrives on April 13th, 2022. I'm super excited about this. I am sure none of the rest of you have read any of this series yet, but this is a series of graphic novels that Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips just, I think they started putting together just when the pandemic hit, and like quarterly, they are releasing a new full on, not single issues. They are going full on into the standalone graphic novel. They did it with Pulp and they're doing it with Reckless. And if you like, you know, like 80s, this story, obviously 1989, but if you like stuff that takes place late 70s through the 80s and tells this story about this guy who used to do very bad things, if you're like a Mac Bolan fan or Executioner or, you know, any of those Remo Williams type stuff, that's kind of who Ethan is without really being a mercenary. He's kind of like kind of a detective, does odd jobs kind of stuff. And then you wrap that in with the history of Los Angeles. This is really, really good, guys. I think that this might be the best work that Brubaker and Phillips have ever done. It is really, really good. Yeah. And the only thing that concerns me is the last Reckless book ended, a little bit of a spoiler, with Ethan years in the future, you know, telling his story. This is how I remember it and stuff. And talks about Anna's death. And so I wonder if this is the actual story, you know, in the tagline, some of which might just kill her. I wonder if this will actually be the one where she dies, which would be, you know, kind of sad because Ethan's kind of stability hinges on Anna being there for him. So good times. Go check it out, ladies and gentlemen, if you haven't. It's the Reckless series. There are three books out now, the fourth book in April. I like it. Mm-hmm. Speaking of... Cool. Movies with low tomato meter readings.
Matthew. You're so cool, Brewster.
Okay, so Fright Night, 1980s horror movie, one of the greatest movies of an era which did not have great movies, is getting a comic book adaptation from American Mythology Publishing. According to the publisher, the series will pick up about a year after the events of the 1985 movie, wherein Herman's Head fights the evil count from that one movie with the Dread Pirate Roberts, and follow a newly formed team of vampire hunters. But something ancient and evil has clawed from the grave to find them. And once you look into the undead abyss, the monsters hiding there also look back. Fright Night will be written by James Kohorek, with art by Neil Vokes, expected to arrive in 2022, which makes sense, seeing that it starts in like 2 weeks.
Yeah, the thing is, they've got a Kickstarter thing going on, which they've already passed their goal. It looks like the Kickstarter is just for people who want to get like variant covers of this series and who maybe not have a comic book shop to go to. But they said that they were already publishing this, whether the Kickstarter succeeded or not. They only needed like $666 to pass their Kickstarter. That was, I mean, because again, it's just for the variant covers.
Right.
But the thing that kind of frustrated me is they did not have an actual release date for this, because I kind of want to read this. I really do enjoy the Fright Night movie, as bad as it is.
Wonderful.
It is a fun movie, kind of up there with Monster Squad a little bit, I think.
It's got Monster Squad in it.
Yeah, it's like Monster Squad and The Lost Boys and Fright Night are like three movies to kind of watch together for some 80s horror kind of reminiscing.
Didn't they remake Fright Night recently?
They did.
David Tennant took on the Roddy McDowall role.
Yeah,
I remember seeing that. Although I've always gotten Fright Night and Creepshow confused. So
understandable from a title perspective.
Well, not only that, but I only ever saw, like, if you show me that picture of like the Fright Night poster, right, with like the cloud, spooky cloud vampire, I'm like, I remember seeing this at the store, but the title was in Spanish, and I don't even remember it. So, those two just kind of weave in and out of a quantum state, and I just have sporadic memories from each of them.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, it's also got Lisa Simpson in there? Yardley Smith, isn't that who the
Yardley Smith is in it. Herman's Head is in it.
And
I
this
think somebody else super Amanda Bierce, I think, maybe.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, maybe that's who I'm thinking. Yeah, no, both of them are in there, right? Yeah. Yardley Smith and Bierce are both in there. Yeah. So this is written by James Kuhurek, but it's actually based on, I guess, a part of the screenplay that was not shot. Tom Holland, not that Tom Holland, who was the writer director, or at least the writer director of this movie, was given his full backing to this. So be on the lookout for it. Fright Night, ooh. Fright Night, the comic, coming out sometime next year. So be aware. Also, if you have any thoughts about anything that we've talked about here, then you need to, dear listener. I don't know why you're not, dear listener.
Yeah,
I look at the numbers
problem,
of all, I look at all the downloads that we get on this show. And then I go over to our Discord server and I'm like, there's less than half the people who listen to this show are on Discord. Oh, sure. And so we need more of you to get over to the Major Spoilers Discord. You can join the Discord server for free, the Major Spoilers Discord. There is a link in the show notes. If you're on your mobile device, click on that link and open up your Discord app. You'll be welcomed in with all sorts of cat gifts and Alice in Wonderland things and all sorts of things that these cool weirdos do over in our general chat set section. And then you can go and explore. You can talk about the Major Spoilers podcast. You can go in and talk about movies if you like. You can go in and talk about behind the scenes stuff. There's like a category for almost every single interest that you are in. I just, Sunday night, I think, I went through and I, in the reading corner section of the Discord, I went through and listed all of the books that I read in 2021, which surprisingly was down from 2020. And I think it's because there were about 10 books that I had started and just couldn't get through because I found the topic boring or uninteresting, or in the case of the Harlem Shuffle book, my Audible player is all screwed up and was playing the chapters out of order and repeating the chapters. So I had to stop that, but you can go find that list over in our Discord server. It's all there and it's completely for free. And you can talk about these stories and a whole lot more. But listen, if you are someone who is a patron, if you are a patron and you haven't done this yet, connect your Patreon account to the Discord server. It's super easy. And then you get access to secret channels. Secret channels. That's all I'm going to say. It is a secret. Yeah. And the people who are patrons and have connected their Discord account are in the know. And they are the ones that are using their Patreon dollars to the extreme. So what are you waiting for? Check out the Discord server. Head over to our Patreon page. Patreon.com/majorspoilers. Now that that's done, let's do some reviews. Matthew, you have one from last week. A lot of people interested in the Mirror War. We reviewed the first book, like at the issue zero that kicked off the Mirror War from IDW Publishing. And now I think they're doing individual issues because now Data gets his own standalone issue.
Yep. And if you ask yourself the concept of the mirror universe where nobility is evil and evil is nobility, how does that affect a character like Data, who just has programs that tell him what is correct and what isn't, and the people who programmed him programmed that in, and there's no emotional component? And you may say to yourself, whoa, this is not my beautiful house. But Celeste Bronfen, the writer, and Roberta Engranata, the artist, did not quote Talking Heads. Instead, they gave us the story of the Enterprise D in the Evil Mirror universe, and how, as opposed to previously in Star Trek, Lieutenant Barclay, the evil Lieutenant Barclay, played by Howling Mad Murdock, translated into the Prime universe, the non-mirror universe, and returned with some technology. Data, in this issue, is trying to get it to figure out, and he finally manages to get it to where they now have Romulan cloaking devices on the ship. But he realizes that Lieutenant Barclay is acting very weird. And Data, who, by the way, has reassembled himself after some horrifying battles with Borg parts. So imagine skinny 1990 Brent Spiner, only with bits and pieces of things that he ripped off of people that he murdered. It's actually quite disturbing. Discovers that Barclay is upset because in this universe, Barclay is from a colony where if you die and bleed into the land, you are eternal and your mind becomes part of the planet itself. and he wants revenge for someone who killed his grandfather. It's weird. I don't remember Barclay having all of this backstory in the Prime universe, but it's an alternate universe, so I'm going to roll with it. And we find that the family whose people killed his grandfather are still out there. And Data says, well, in order to keep you from being distracted, I'm going to take you home and we're going to resolve this war. And so the question of how does Data, who is neither good nor evil, just programmed well, deal with matters of morality and matters of right and wrong? And the answer becomes about the same way normal Data would, with the sole exception of he doesn't worry about whether something is morally correct at the end. So by the end of this story, he makes a perfectly Data decision that brings the whole arc to a close, that does free up Barclay's attention to focus on the war with the Romulans and whatever it is that they need to do in the main storyline. But the weird part is, this is called Star Trek Mirror War Data. It is, in fact, Star Trek Mirror War Barclay featuring Lieutenant Commander Data. And while I have no problem with that, I feel like Data is actually used really well in this story. It's not necessarily a story about him, except in as much as I guess he does resolve the conflict. I guess it's all how you look at it. But the Mirror War series, I've been kind of bumping in and out of it, and I feel like it's up and down. And as with so many ongoing stories, depending on who's drawing it, I might love an issue and then come back and go, oh, well, this is a different person. This one, very, very solid. I feel like if you say, you know, if you go back to that original Star Trek Mirror Universe episode, it was kind of just everybody's evil. But if you look at the Deep Space Nine and the, you know, the later additions to that reality, it becomes a lot more complex. And I feel like this is something that feels of a piece with the Deep Space Nine material, where maybe the Klingons are evil, maybe they're not, and maybe the Imperials are jerks, and sometimes they do the right thing for the wrong reasons. This is definitely interesting, and it's really fun to see Data basically doing what Data did throughout the original series, trying to help his friends and figure out how to be human. So I'm going to give it 3.5 slices of meatloaf as an old school Star Trek fan, which is ridiculous that I'm talking about Next Generation as though it were old school. Just watch me crumble away to dust. But as someone who remembers the show of the 80s, this is really, really well done stuff within that framework inverted for the Evil Mirror universe. So if you like Data stories, definitely check it out. If you like Mirror Universe stories, maybe check it out. If you're a Star Trek completist, you've already got it and you know what I'm talking about. So I'm not even going to speak in code. Did you like it? Yes, you did. Shut up.
Okay. There you go. That is that's the thing that Matthew
that's
shared.
That's the thing.
It most certainly is. Okay. So out this week, I really shouldn't give this as high a rating as I did. This week, Firefly Holiday Special number 1 from Boom Studios. I know a lot of you are Firefly fans. You follow all of the adventures of Team Serenity, and you're all down with all the characters. You got the Captain Jacks. Mm-hmm. And you've got the cyborg lady and
Dougie
Fresh.
Yeah,
Dougie Fresh is in there. And then you got the guy with the hat who's kind of a jerk.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Jerk hat, yeah.
Yeah, jerk hat guy.
Cute engine girl.
That's what I said, cyborg lady, right? Isn't she a Terminator? I think she's a Terminator. Anyway.
No.
You're thinking of a different girl who's a Terminator.
That's a different cute girl in Firefly.
There's it's all the same. Listen, I'm an expert on everything Firefly, and I'm telling you guys, this is the way it is. Now, I'm also, happen to be, Rodrigo, an expert on all things A Christmas Carol.
Sure.
Including The Muppets Christmas Carol that has Dickens in it.
Yeah, possibly the best version of A Christmas Carol, I would say.
Yeah. What that story really needed was a talking frog. I mean, yeah.
So here's the deal. If you're a fan of Firefly and you're a fan of A Christmas Carol, ooh, you are in for a treat. As Jane has to have his selfish behavior checked by Firefly, Ghosts of Past, Ghost of Firefly Past, Ghost of Firefly Present, and Ghost of Firefly Future. All happens in this book for $7.99.
Wait, I mean, what did you say it cost?
$7.99. I think it's like 48 pages. I don't think it's 96
like a special,
pages.
Right?
It's like it's a special. Yeah, it's a special.
Annual.
No, it's a special. It's where it would say, it says it's a specifically, it's a holiday special. If it was an annual,
holidays
they'd say
come
annual.
Once a year, that makes it annual.
No, holidays come quite a bit. There's a holiday like a week after Christmas called the New Year's holiday. And then there's a Valentine holiday. And then the March holiday. And then the April holiday. And then three in June for no reason. I got to tell you, I am somebody who is over half of a century old at this point. I'm not as young as, or not as old as A Christmas Carol in its original form, but I'm tired of that story. I'm tired of every holiday. We got to do our own version of The Christmas Carol. You better crank that one out, Happy Days. Oh, really? Okay. The only other thing that they could have done worse than A Christmas Carol in Firefly Holiday Special number one is Firefly, It's a Wonderful Life.
Sure.
I thought you were going to say Mork.
No.
A Christmas Carol is like the equivalent of how immediately after Thanksgiving, you'll start seeing commercials that are like, at Jake's House of Pork, my true love gave to me five sausage or whatever, you know.
Right. That's exactly how it goes down. So from me, I see what you're doing. I dig it. But I'll be honest, I'm not having any of it. Is it well drawn? Well, I guess the guy who looks like Jane, what's his name? The guy that was on the spy show that later turned into the Shazam guy. It's not the same guy, but he was in the same show as the Shazam guy.
Zachary Levi?
Yeah. His co-star in the spy show was Jane, right? Wasn't that the guy who
Yvonne
played Jane?
Yvonne Strachowski?
I don't know. I'm asking you.
I did not watch enough.
Third face.
Here's the thing. The art is fine. The story is fine. It's the same story we've read a million times. And so I don't ultimately care for this. Maybe you do. I'll give this 3.5 slices of meatloaf out of 5. But I don't want to ever read another Christmas Carol story ever again. I'm just so tired of it. It is such a story that, yes, you're supposed to reflect upon your actions. Jane, reflect upon your actions. Be a better scoundrel, Jane. I don't need that. And I don't think anybody else does either, especially at 7:99.
Tonight, Stephen will be visited by three ghosts. The ghost of Christmas Carol past.
Oh, no.
The ghost of Christmas Carol future.
The ghost of Christmas Carol future will be like, what would that be? That would be like some Dynamite Entertainment holiday special 2025. Right?
It's just like this Grim Reaper guy that just takes you.
It'll be like a
single screen, and it just has the Major Spoilers logo, and it says majorspoilers.nft, and that's all that.
But it'll be the Grim Reaper from the Grim Life Billy and Mandy. Yeah, that's who it'll be.
The ghost of Christmas Carol Past will be,
will actually be Dickens, I think. Yeah, I think Dickens himself. $7.99, man. I could go on a whole rant about $7.99, but Wayne actually had a really well thought out argument about comic prices hitting $9.99 after the release of Avengers 50 this past week. And he goes into some, is this what we're going to expect? And for my $7.99 book, or even a $9.99 book, I better not go get something that I can read for free on the internet. In the case of The Christmas Carol, I don't want to see your rendition of it. I don't want to see your take on it. Give me something interesting. I'm sorry, writer and artist of this book. You did a fine job with the assignment that you were given. Congratulations. Do not feel bad about this. I don't care for this. There's a link in the show notes if you want to buy this for yourself. So there you go. Helps us out. It's our Amazon affiliate link. Let's wrap this up with Rain, number one from Image Comics. Now, I watched a video with Zoe Thorogood today, I think, by accident. I just stumbled upon it, where she's talking about Rain. And I saw some of the art.
Really excellent.
Yeah. So tell us all about this, Rodrigo.
All right. So first off, Rain, number one, based on, I think, a book that's already out by
Joe Hill.
So writer Joe Hill and David M. Buher. I think it's mainly that Buher is adapting it to comics, and then art by Zoe Thorogood, which is very good. Another thing you should know, this comes out January 12th of 2022, so we're looking very far ahead, because, you know, the year's running out, and there aren't that many comics that are coming out in the last weeks of the year, so I'm already cannibalizing the comics from next year for reviews. That said, Rain, this issue, number one, is the sort of the instigating kind of incident of Rain, which feels like some sort of post-apocalyptic thing. And really that's the thing, is like, we actually don't see what happens after the incident. Like, this is just this first issue is like the crawl at the beginning of a movie, or the narration where, like, Scorch Trials is like, all the bugs came out and then the army fought them, and the bugs killed the army and the army killed the bugs, and now here's the movie. Since you don't kind of get to see, like, I guess the actual premise of it, you just see basically from the point of view of what I'm supposing is going to be the main character, the tragedy that is the instigating incident. It's hard to tell where they're going. And so for this piece, I'm like, I've already seen this 1,000 times, right? Like, this vignette of, like, on that day, the whole world changed. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like the day the turbo zombies attacked was the last day in which the country was blah, blah, blah. You know what I'm saying? So this lowers my enjoyment of it somewhat, especially because at first glance, the premise actually doesn't seem that tragic. Like, yes, like, clearly lots of people died, but when you think about, like, basically what this is sort of getting at is, like, what if X was bad? It just kind of doesn't seem like that compelling of a thing. Again, I think a glimpse of the world post event would have been good, is what I'm getting at. That all said, this issue is definitely worth picking up for Zoe Thorogood's art, which is great. It's very expressive while also having a level, a high level of stylization, right? Like, these aren't like photorealistic people, but all of the features, all of the faces, all of the bodies, they're different, they're interesting. The cinematography of it is interesting, you know. The paneling, it's like, it's good. It's, you know, I keep looking at it, and I go back and look at it, and I go back and look at it again. It's like, and also an artist that is not terrified of backgrounds, which is nice. I think, you know, I'm going to give it 3.5 slices of meatloaf, definitely above average. Not that interested in what happens, a little bit interested in what happens, but not enough to get me to pick up the book again. But the art is enough to get me to pick up the book again. So you might hear me talk about it at some point.
All right. But it'll have to be like in February, because you've already spoiled the January one. Yep. So, yeah.
Yep.
All right. Dear listeners, if you want even more reviews, head over to our website, majorspoilers.com. You can find reviews there almost every day of the week, and maybe even more in the coming months and years, depending on how our funding goes. Patreon.com/majorspoilers. And I know that there's some of you who have already fired up your Twitter machine and are quickly cranking out things trying to correct me. Hello, Legion Omnicon. Wait, that's not the show he listens to. Maybe he does. Hey, welcome. Let me clarify. Adam Baldwin played Jane on Firefly. He also played John Casey on Chuck that had Zachary Levi in it, who went on to become Shazam. All right. So I knew who I was talking about. Just didn't know his name. He's one of those Baldwin boys. You know, those horrible Baldwin boys.
He's in no way related to the Baldwin boys.
I also said that there was a Terminator in Firefly. Summer Glau played a Terminator in the Terminator TV series.
But Summer Glau is not the girl about whom I was talking.
I mean, you said there was a cute girl in there. Summer Glau is a very
There's like four cute girls in Firefly.
That's true.
It's also got the girl from
Five, if you count Christina Hendricks.
I mean, we're not, but...
I mean, she's not part of the regular cast.
Yeah, she wasn't a regular cast.
I always count Christina Hendricks. She made three appearances.
That's not part of the regular cast.
And there's only
maybe more than Bishop.
Of Firefly, so then
there's like 13 episodes of the show. She's in three of them. She's a regular.
All right. Discord server, everybody. Discord server, everybody. You guys going to go see Matrix? Are you going to watch the Matrix, whatever the thing is, Resurrected?
Yeah,
I feel like I am.
Yeah.
Is it coming out this weekend? That doesn't come out this weekend, does it? They wouldn't put the Matrix.
It comes out on the 22nd, I think.
Oh, so it comes out for Christmas. I was going to say, they weren't going to put the Matrix up against Spider-Man, were they?
Does it come out streaming?
Oh, yeah. It's going to be. Yeah. All of 2021, HBO doubled down and said, yep, we're putting this on our streaming service. So there. And, you know, we got a couple of weeks, but they may have still made the right move.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. You going to go to the theater, Rodrigo, and watch the Spider-Man?
No. I if there is one movie that I almost braved the arising variants for, it was Encanto, and I didn't go see it, so I'm definitely not going to go see Spider-Man in the theaters.
Oh, well, you'll be happy to know that Encanto comes out on Disney Plus on December 24th.
Oh, well, good. Finally.
So you don't have to wait. You don't have to wait the 90 days or the 45 days for that to come out. Today I almost said, I think I'm going to just go to the movie theater, not because I'm afraid of COVID, because I'm triple vaxxed now. But who knows with Omicron, you know, he was the big, transformer, by the way, Matthew,
right.
He's a planet.
Yep. He's a whole planet. But it's just the fact that I know this theater, and I know that the last time that I was there, it's like their drink machines were just pouring stuff all over the floor and the floors were sticky. And I just know the type of people that go to theaters here in this town. And I just have absolutely zero interest in going through that experience. I honestly think the oldest, the boy and I, went and saw the Spider-Man European Vacation movie in Kansas City at the big AMC 20 at the whatever that shopping complex is. Listeners who live up in Kansas City know it's AMC 20. We went to go see the Spider-Man movie there, and the audience was just so appalling to me in, oh, my cell phone. Oh, my bladder. Oh, listen to how loud I can crunch this gummy worm in the movie. And I know what Matthew's thinking. Wait a minute. You can't crunch a gummy worm. Oh, go to a movie theater and you'll see people can crunch a gummy worm.
It is when and your teeth are real bad.
I think that that ruined part of my enjoyment of European Vacation. And, I have zero interest in going and seeing that.
There are so many things wrong with what you just said.
Nothing is wrong with what I just said.
I'm like Steven's got a home theater. Like
I do.
He's used to sitting in like a couch with the air conditioning on and almost no candy and pop on the floor. He has raised two boys, so I can't imagine that the number is actually zero.
I mean, there's still boogers all over the seat, right? I mean, yeah, so you got that. You still
well,
have
sure,
to contend
it's your
with.
Chair, but.
But, I feel the same way. I don't have a setup like Steven does, but there's two things that kind of repel me from the theater nowadays. One, that people that, you know, there are weird coronavirus variants running around yes. trying to hunt the seven sons of seven sons. and also that I get migraines, and sometimes I get migraines in the middle of a movie theater or in the middle of a movie at yeah. the theater. And it's a lot more inconvenient to like take medicine and like, yeah. you know, get all my ducks in a row. Than if I was just waiting and watching it at home and could pause the movie. Like, for example, I have never gotten back to the Jungle Cruise. I started watching it
oh, yeah.
on Disney Plus, got a migraine, and then I've never gone back to it. So it's still like 2/3 of the way through.
Yeah, with the Rock.
The Rock Johnson. And Mary Poppins.
Yeah, I was thinking the Jungle Book. Never mind.
No. Yeah, Jungle Cruise, yeah.
No. Jungle Cruise. Different Disney property.
Now, was she married to Tom Cruise or?
I have zero interest in, you know, great. The movie theater experience can be great when you all go in and you're all laughing at the laughing parts and you're all cheering at the cheering parts and you're all crying at the crying parts. But in between that, when you're sitting there going, what did he say? I can't. Yeah. What did he say? And mommy, Timmy hit me. And then the dumbass who just sits there and kicks the back of your seat the entire time. I don't need any of that. And until our movie theater becomes an Alamo Draft House and they don't put up with any of that stuff, I really am not interested in going to a movie theater. So I'm going to have to wait the 45 days or 90 days or whatever it is for Sony to release this. But I don't know where they're going to release it. I don't know if it's going to be on Disney Plus or if it's going right to just whoever streaming property wants to grab it or what, because that's a Sony thing and Sony doesn't have a streaming platform. They're aligned with Stars, I think. And then, I think in 2022, who is Stars? Is that Paramount? I don't know who has Stars.
I think it's Paramount.
Or maybe it's Lionsgate. I forget who that is. But then in 2022, Netflix has the first run rights to Sony properties. So it would be weird to see No Way Home show up on Netflix before it showed up on Disney Plus. Ah. But, so that's my thing. What do you mean? What happened?
It could happen.
I mean, it could. It depends on how much Disney pull Disney has, and they may have in this case done something to ensure that it shows up on Disney Plus first. Mm-hmm. But that's a weird thing. The fact that Sony has sat on the sidelines this entire time on the streaming platform is just like the weirdest thing. You know, everybody else is jumping on it and they're seeing the benefits. And Sony's just sitting there going, we can't even get you PlayStations. What makes you think we can get a streaming video into your home?
I'm going to do streaming video now. And it just happens.
I mean, it kind of did.
Yeah, when you have the capital.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was there when.
What? I mean.
I mean, they have a lot of money.
North Dakota? I don't know.
Yeah, that's
Sony has lots of money.
You know who else has lots of money?
Who?
The cat.
The cat who stole all the money.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Anyway, let's talk about the Master Planner saga.
This is
some Spider-Man stuff. This is like, in the first, 30 issues of, or at least the first 35 issues.
This is issues 30 through 33 of Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah. So it's in the first 35 issues of The Amazing Spider-Man by Stan Lee and Steve Ditko in 1965. So this isn't, you know, this isn't updated for anything like that. This is an interesting story and it still so fascinates me that all of the lore that we have in our Spider-Man properties.
Yeah.
And probably just in the Marvel universe in general, there's exceptions like Thanos and Guardians of the Galaxy, et cetera. But so much comes from like the first 10 years of Marvel comics. And in the case of Spider-Man, it feels like the first 100 issues of Spider-Man is where they draw all their stuff from. Like we all talk about Ned Leeds being, you know, Genki in the movie. And we're like, oh no, that's Genki from Miles Morales. And it's like, no, there's a Ned Leeds in Spider-Man in the early days. In this series, he's asked Betty to marry him. And Betty's like, oh, I think I want to, but I would much rather marry that Peter Parker. And there's a whole thing where Peter's just like, oh, fine. If she ever finds out I'm Spider-Man, she's going to hate me. I'm never going to marry her. And he just causes grief for no reason.
Yeah.
So the whole thing is someone has busted into J. Jonah Jameson's apartment and stolen all of his stocks and bonds. And JJ has put out $1,000 reward for the capture of the cat burglar or whatever his name is.
The cat.
And in the meantime, there's a side story running along where there's also a group of criminals that Spider-Man keeps running into as he's going to track down the cat, because he wants the $1,000 we'll get to in a minute, that are trying to steal nuclear material for some secret bunker underneath the Hudson River. And the reason why Peter Parker needs $1,000 is because poor Aunt May is in the hospital, Matthew. Poor Aunt yep. May dying in the hospital. 95-year-old Aunt May. Well, she didn't got the rickets. I wonder if this is where they got the idea for two thoughts come to mind. Mm-hmm. So at one point, Aunt May was sick. When isn't she sick? Honestly, am I right, folks? Aunt May had some an illness before and she needed a blood transfusion. And so Peter Parker gave her the blood transfusion. And so right. Now she's suffering from radiation poisoning. I wonder if this is not where they got the idea in the, what was
Spider-Man
the one
where, video game?
Spider-Man
not the
Rain.
Spider-Man. Is that the one? Rain?
Where Mary Jane dies.
Yes.
Of radiation poisoning.
Yes. I'm wondering if that is not where some of that came from. Number one. And then number two, I'm also wondering if this is where they got the idea for She-Hulk.
That's an interesting point. I mean, it's the same writer.
Stan Lee.
I would say it's, yeah, it is.
Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely a possibility. I would say She-Hulk is almost a certainty because, you know, Stan Lee recycles ideas right. and puts a new hat on them and makes them look cool. But basically, it's the same thing. You know, Daredevil is another take on Spider-Man. The X-Men are another take on the Fantastic Four. Thor is another take on, Hercules. But you do have definite similarities there. I don't know if it created that Rain comic or not, but if it does, I would be really mad and I would blame a lot of people because that was a terrible comic.
It certainly makes you think, right? And then number two, It makes you go, at some point, again, not having read all 800 million copies of Spider-Man, does Aunt May get spider powers at some point?
Not in the main continuity. On what reality she becomes Spider-Man and she is Spider-Bam?
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, and, I guess you wouldn't get...
She can't invent webbing. She uses her special recipe for wheat cakes to swing across the city.
I thought maybe she was
going to
knit.
This is all true. I am not making this up.
No.
I thought maybe she was going to knit, use her knitting or something. The reason why she doesn't get Spider-Man powers is because Spider-Man gets isotope 630 or whatever it is, 920, 420.
Isotope 420. He gets it from a guy named Ray Ray in a van.
Yeah, exactly. They have to ship it in from the West Coast.
I thought it was Johnny Blaze that got isotope 420.
Took Matthew a minute to really appreciate that joke. So this isotope, they find this isotope that could come in to save her radiation poisoning. But then the secret villain, the master planner, who's been stealing all these radioactive materials from around the city, also is going to steal isotope 420 for his radiation poisoning that he's going to do on everybody. Turns out the master planner is in reality Dr. Octopus,
the
who everyone
Spider-Man
thought was dead.
Greatest Spider-Man villain. There are people who will argue the Green Goblin. The Green Goblin is a piker. The Green Goblin is a jobber. The Green Goblin is a schmendrick. Dr. Octopus is Spider-Man's most dangerous foe.
And also a great song by our good friends, Ookla the Mock.
Dr. Octopus has many sons.
Nope, not
and
that
many
one.
Sons
nope,
has Dr.
Nope,
Octopus.
Nope.
Oh, right, it's arms. Dr. Octopus.
So has many. Here's the thing that I find really amazing about this, and you guys jump in.
Spider-Man?
first of all, we're 33 issues in on Amazing Spider-Man. Yes, we've had, you know, Iron Man has been out, Thor has been out. I forget who else has been out at this point. But, you know, they make a point in the very first issue of this arc where the Master Planner is stealing radioactive material from Anthony Stark's labs. And I'm like, hey, cool. There's some cross promotion. And then they bring in, you know, Kirk Connors, who had left the story, had become the Lizard and had been cured or whatever. He comes back in the story to help Peter Parker. And then, of course, we get the return of Dr. Octopus in here, which I think is really kind of cool to bring those all together. And again, we're 33 issues into this entire series, and we've already got the Lizard. We've already had the death and return of Doc Ock. We've got some building going on between this title and the rest of the Marvel Universe. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, the first 50 issues of Amazing Spider-Man have all the big names. I mean, by this point, we've already got the Rhino. We've already got Kraven. We've already got all of these, you know, guys running around who are animal guys.
And also, this arc introduces us to Gwen Stacy and to Harry Osborn.
And it features what I consider to be the quintessential perfect Spider-Man moment. I think that really
this is from the
issue that everybody wants to try and top whenever you have somebody take over Spider-Man. You want to top Spider-Man number 33.
Yes. And so for those of you who have seen Spider-Man Homecoming, where young Peter Parker is trapped underneath all of that rubble and he has to fight to get his way out, and he has to, all the water is dripping on him, and he has to push, you know, the tons of material off of him. That's coming from Amazing Spider-Man 33, where the roof has collapsed in the underground lair, and he has to struggle for, like, it feels like half an issue, but it's really only like four pages of, you know, can I make it? Can I make it? Can I make it? Yes, I can. And so, that's where that comes from, is this issue. And you're right. It's a great scene.
Yes, and this is also the arc that breaks my heart, because this is the arc where underarm webs disappear.
What is it, in the first issue, and then it's gone by the last issue?
Yeah, underarm webs, they don't permanently go away, but they stop appearing regularly, and then by the time Johnny Romita takes over the art, maybe 15 or 20 issues down the line, they go away for a long time. So, but yeah, this... The Master Planner reveal is one of the big swerves of Spider-Man history. I really enjoyed how well it was set up. There's this evil villain, and you're like, oh no, evil new villain, because we've seen it. You've seen it a dozen times.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, oh, nope, somebody you already know. That's neat. And this is a point in comics where, yes, it's probably been done 100 times by 1965 and a million times by 2021, but this is such a good take on it, especially knowing that eventually Dr. Octopus would nearly marry Aunt May. We'll get to that arc next year, probably.
Also, the other thing that I find kind of fascinating, too, is modern portrayals of Doc Ock, Otto Octavius, is that he's this kind of short, frumpy, you know, kind of bulky guy. I don't want to say fat, because he's never portrayed as fat,
right?
As schlubby or anything like that. He's just short and stocky. Thick. Yeah. With two C's, ladies and gentlemen.
Right. Absolutely. But
here he's kind of svelte. I mean, he's like a linebacker.
Yeah. And if you go back to his earliest appearances, it's always unclear whether he's actually fat or whether he's got the thing around his lower torso that he uses to control his arms.
Yeah.
But even to, I really like this Ock. I mean, Steve Ditko is one of those artists who, in a lot of ways, especially in 65, can kind of do no wrong. There's a recurring character in the first two issues who's very clearly John Wayne with an eye patch. And every time I see this guy, I'm like, oh, it's pretty cool, Steve.
Are you talking about that Fletcher guy?
Talk about Patch with the hat?
No, who's the undercover reporter guy?
Is he Patch with a hat?
I think so, but what's his name in the series?
Foswell?
Yeah, Frederick that's Foswell? Who it is. That's who it is, Foswell. I always thought of him as, I can see where you're coming from. I don't know if I would go as far as John Wayne, but...
He's John Wayne.
I kind of see him. I don't know, Rodrigo, do you see him as John Wayne? Fearless Fosdick?
Do you know? Do you...
That's a little Abner reference for those of you.
Now you're doing
enough.
It on purpose.
But that's the thing, right? Fosdick or something like that?
Foswell. Frederick Foswell. Foswell.
Yeah, yeah.
See, you scared Rodrigo off the internet.
Oh, man. Way to go, Matthew.
Oh, sorry. I was muted. Let me just shorten the small lecture that I just gave. I can see it.
Yay!
What are your takes on like this portrayal of Dr. Octopus in his svelte form?
I mean, it's a good look for him.
This is before he got hold of Aunt May's wheat cakes.
Yeah, I like Dr. Octopus. I do like that a lot of the time he's not portrayed as like being like super muscular.
Mm-hmm.
So that's nice, at least. You know, it's like that the prototypical Dr. Octopus is, you know, kind of rounder and he's got like a bull haircut.
Mm-hmm.
And he's older too, right? It's like a lot of superheroes and supervillains get like aged down from their original incarnations, but Dr. Octopus, you know, stays more or less in his 40s, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. There are changes, though, with Peter. You know, he's gone from a high school kid to this arc has him actually enrolling in Empire State University.
Mm-hmm.
In this, that's where he meets Gwen and that's where he meets Harry Osborn. And they've
this
got some changes
point
to go
where
through.
They were still almost going in real time.
Yeah.
Because the first 2 years of this book are the last 2 years of Peter's high school experience. He was 16 when he got bit. So he went through his junior and senior years in the first 25 issues of this book.
Yeah. And I like that at this point still that they're focusing on Peter Parker, science genius, right? Because not only is he going to Empire State because he got a scholarship for being smart in science, you know, he uses his science to figure out how to keep himself from being knocked out by the knockout gas by the Master Planner gang. He helps Kurt Connors in developing the antidote for Aunt May. He even tests the antidote on himself to see, or on his blood sample to see if it will cure Aunt May or not. So there's a lot of good Peter Parker, also brainy scientist in here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's also a lot of Peter Parker, big jerk.
Yeah, early Stanley Parker,
right? Unintentional
is,
jerk.
Yeah. Yes and no. I mean, he's flat out rude to certain people, and there are times, especially even now, you'll get to a point where new young superhero will come out, and Spider-Man will be like, "Look, idiot, hang up your tights right now. You don't have what it takes. You're a schmuck, and nobody likes you." And you do have some of that here, you know, when he shows up and he sends Betty Brant swirling out into her little freak out in the last issue, you know, whatever is going on there, it's another example of how Peter does things and doesn't think them through. And then he feels terrible after the fact. Oh, I'm no good for Betty. I was never good for Betty. I'm going to try and cut her loose and let her go on and be better. But yeah, it really is weird how self-centered Stan Lee Peter can be.
Yeah, but also at the same time, I'm not sure that Peter Parker the jerk is all the fault of Peter Parker in here, because he is truly obsessed, Rodrigo, with Aunt May.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's got a singular goal and disses everybody at school to get it, which is good to a certain degree. So this Spider-Man has a strong sort of like social component. Like there are like pages and pages of just characters like college kids hanging out talking about Spider-Man or about Peter Parker, right?
Yeah.
Or to Peter Parker. And it is in these places that I think Stan Lee is turning the screws, right? Is saying, yeah, you know, Swinging around the city is cool, and being super strong is cool, but villains are dangerous. But more importantly, cute girls want to talk to you, and you can't if you're a superhero, because your girlfriend is like, why? And then other girls are like, why? So being a cool Spider-Man is not all fun and games, kids. And that's that's part of what has always made Spider-Man compelling, right? The fact that, like, Peter Parker doesn't have enough spoons to be both Peter Parker and Spider-Man, right? He just doesn't, unlike guys like Iron Man and guys like Superman, who effortlessly cover both bases and have miraculously changed out of their costume by the time a nosy person comes around the corner. Spider-Man doesn't do that, right? He doesn't manage to do that. He screws it up, or his relationships suffer because of it. And that's more so than a lot of the stuff that we see here of him, like, lifting a big machine. Of course, classic Spider-Man, or fighting Dr. Octopus, or solving a mystery, or being a scientist. It's this inability to get his act together that actually makes Spider-Man hugely compelling. And I from what I've read, a breath of fresh air for superheroes back in the back in the early days of
Marvel. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. So and you know, before every superhero was driven by a dead parent, thanks Geoff Johns, the fact that Peter Parker had this guilt, this grief, this, you know, this psychosocial problem felt very real, felt very authentic. I mean, if you actually look into the adjustment, the development problems that come with the loss of your parents, and then, you know, the loss of another sub-parent in Uncle Ben, you look at, you know, Peter Parker, he has weirdly aggressive behavior. He's very clingy about Aunt May. He's constantly, you know, oh, what about my health? Oh, am I sick? Is she sick? You know, everything that Peter Parker does, the weird social withdrawal, all of these strange things where all of a sudden he's a genius and then he's failing all of his classes. These are all really things that happen. These are symptoms associated with the loss of a parent. So whether Stan Lee knew it or not, this was a really compelling, really real kind of portrayal.
At what issue do we find out that Peter's parents are actually alive and spies?
Amazing Spider-Man Annual number 5, which I think is from 67.
Oh, so not too far from this point.
Not too far out, no.
Yeah. That's actually earlier than I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where he finds out that they were spies and that they are dead. Their robot selves come back around Amazing number 400. Oh, sorry, spoilers. They come back from the dead, and they're totally not evil robots around Amazing Spider-Man number 400, which would be like 1994.
Are they secretly Doombots in disguise?
They're not Doombots, but they are secretly bots in disguise. Okay. I mean, they're totally not bots in disguise. They're just totally Richard and Mary Parker.
Okay.
Apparently, well, Amazing Spider-Man Annual number 5 comes out in 64, so it's about 2 months down the line at this point.
Well, this is 65, so if it would have been the
year before. It's in the past!
Yeah. Interesting. You know, you're right about reflecting some of the things that kids might be going through at this time. And I'm sure, you know, kids are writing in all the time to Marvel Comics and sharing their thoughts and ideas, which I'm sure then influenced Stan Lee and what he's writing. But I also just find that, you know, Stan Lee really tries to be hip with the kids, in all of his writing, because man, the groovy and the lingo flow freely here in these early comics, and boy does it feel dated whenever you read that. Although I will say there is like a half page panel of Peter trying to enroll in college, which 20 years later is almost exactly the same process that Matthew and I had to do to enroll in college. The only difference was that the schedule could be found on a computer, but you still had to rush through all these various lines and do all these other things to get registered and enrolled in your classes. So that brought a little flashback to me.
I feel like Peter Parker's use of the slangity slang.
Well, it's everything.
Is really good in kind of the Buffy way, in kind of the, do you guys remember the movie Heathers?
Yes, sure. Of course.
How everybody in Heather's had a shared slang that was in no way like the real world and would never, ever, ever come out of the mouth of a real person. But right. In that universe, it was consistent. I always feel like Stanley's slang is like that, and that nobody ever said, you know, that we were ginchy dudes being groovy and hep cats and slap me five, brother. Nobody ever said that. It only happened in Stan Lee stories, and now that's how we remember the 60s.
Sure. I know. Well, maybe. I don't know. But I'm pretty sure at some point someone had to pull Stan aside and say, hey, let me slip you the teen lingo handbook so you know the right words to use, Stan.
No, he borrowed it from Bob Haney, who wrote Teen Titans.
There you go. All right. Bottom line, I enjoyed this a whole lot more than I thought I would. There's still the problem of 1965 comics where you encounter walls of text again and again and again, which kind of drag the story down. But at the same time, you get to find these real gems of lingo that Stan is putting into people's mouths and everything. Mm-hmm. You get to see that kids back in the 60s were just horrible to one another. Overall, I really enjoyed it. And if you can track this down, this is actually in one of the Essentials volumes that Marvel mm-hmm. has out that you can still get through the Amazon affiliate link that we have in the show notes. So if you want to get it there as well as a bunch of other stories, I say go and check this out. Master Planner Saga was much more pleasing than I thought it was going to be. Matthew, what about you?
I had thought that around 2016, they trade paperbacked the Master Planner Saga. But even if they didn't, this is worth looking into. This is really, first of all, it's a 4-issue arc at a time when comic books were all, here's a story that you can read. This is the beginning of the point where Stan really starts cooking and everything is ongoing, interlocking, you know, Lego subplots. But this is also a really, really great take on a 4-issue story, which is how and why the 4-issue story became a whole thing. And if you want to know what was so special that people are all like, oh yeah, Lee and Ditko Spider-Man, this is a perfect thing. It's issues 30 with 31, 32, and 33. So it's less than 80 pages. It's a really, really great story. It's Ditko at the top of his game. It's Stan Lee being Stan Lee in a way that only Stan Lee can be. Hang loose, heroes. I'm going to drown Spider-Man under the river. But you also have some really real moments. You have real emotion. You have real interaction. And you have Peter Parkering in a way that everybody now insists he has to be 19 forever, and we're just going to keep bringing him back to high school for the rest of our natural lives.
Rodrigo, final thoughts from you.
Yeah. These issues are the ones that cemented that version of Peter Parker, right? And the definitive version of Peter Parker for a lot of people, and also the definitive version of Peter Parker for a long time. In a lot of ways, whenever somebody doesn't write Peter Parker like that, they are trying to move away from this depiction. So for the history of it, you know, for the art, for the story, it's worth picking up if you can get a hold of it. You know, this was written a long time ago, so there are walls of text. There are awkwardly tiny panels sometimes. Comic books have changed a lot since then. There are pages that have a lot of panels.
Yeah, 9-panel grid, a big deal in this.
Yeah, not because they're trying to, you know, not because the artist is trying to give you a claustrophobic feeling, but just because it's like, this is how many panels it is. Mm-hmm. So there's that, right? If you're going into it expecting to be completely blown away by it, if you're coming at it from current comics, you might not be, right? It's like, we talk about it a lot, like somebody who doesn't... who listens to the Beatles and says, like, well, I've already heard everything that's in here. Like, it's because everybody has copied that, and right. That's what you've heard, right? So you have to go in knowing that.
That's exactly what I was going to say. When you're sitting in the theater this weekend watching the Spider-Man swinging on the big screen, spoiler alert, and you're wondering, where do they come up with all these fantastic visuals? This is it, right here.
Yep.
It's the Master Planner Saga from Stan Lee, Steve Ditko, Marvel Comics, 1965. go grab it and from our Amazon affiliate link. And that is where we're going to wrap it up this week. Thank you so much for being part of the Major Spoilers Experience. We're going to be back next week. Oh, what is next week? We are almost at the end of the year. Oh, we got a General Chatter show next week on the Major Spoilers Podcast. Uh-huh. You're going to want to be here. Why? Because we know that you love comics and we do too. And we will talk with you soon.
Fat the X-ray vision of Superman. I could save a few bucks and stand around and read through the covers of the comics on the stand. But although every other page would be backwards, I suppose I could still read the evens and the odds. Well, I don't know. Guess I haven't thought this all the way through. Plus, as soon as the comic book store guy knew, he kicked my butt out on the corner. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Think about a better way. If I was hulking green or gray, I could just bust through that brick wall, take their comic books away. But then the little meat would deal with all the tanks and bombs and guns. Have you ever tried to read a series with all that going on? Guess I need to rethink this plan. How would I bag and board my comics with such huge hands? Guess I already told ya. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Start raving, it's like a man of iron. Might not be surprised if I'm that I might actually have the heart cold to follow an entire storyline. But would I really even need to read up on all those escapades? I mean, who needs such distractions when your sister's such a babe? But the downside is such a beast. Being shot up in a fun, being the Middle East with a king sign throwing soldier. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Major spoiler, whoa, 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 whoa. What a major spoiler.
This podcast is copyright 2021 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.